The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant, and Bronco Prometica, Partner and Chief Strategy Officer from a company called eGlobal Tech. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Great.
Happy to be here.
Yes.
You know, I've done, you know, literally 521 shows, and we've talked to people from Microsoft and Oracle, then we talked about DevOps, and we've talked about specific partners, and we've talked about disaster recovery. And a lot of times I'll take a little silo and do a deep dive in this silo and that silo and that silo. And sometimes you don't see the forest for the silos. You don't see the forest for the trees. And so I thought I'd bring in a couple of different people with different perspectives from the same company, global perspectives, and you both have kind of an international background, so you can give a perspective on this and talk about, you know, what's going on in the federal government with the CIOs, you know? It seems to be a problem there. A lot of people are transitioning, and there's acting CIOs, and there's best practices, and some agencies have tons and tons of CIOs, and some are doing it right, and some are doing it wrong. And I thought it'd be interesting to see someone like you, Bronco, who's got really, you know, 20 years of really deep experience and seen all, you know, lots of skeletons in the closet, seen a lot of the bad ways and the good ways as well, and balance that with maybe some young and impressionable person who's going to look at it from, you know, a younger perspective and go, well, Bronco, you're full of beans. You don't know what you're talking about. Actually, what's going on is they should all have mobile devices and be able to work from their sailboats. And Bronco's going to say, not on my shift, buddy. And so that's the idea today, is to talk about challenges for the federal CIO and look at best practices and just have maybe a different perspective than a standard perspective. If I bring in someone from ABC company, they're going to say, well, yeah, ABC is the solution. And Bronco, that's what I don't want. I want you to say, here's two or three different ways you can look at it, and here's an approach that might work, and it doesn't work at all.
Absolutely.
But before we begin, Bronco, tell us about your background, please.
So I've been in the business for about 20 years right now, was a consultant originally with PricewaterhouseCoopers, and then left to help start up eGlobal Tech. 14 years later, we're a company of about 320 employees, I think, specializing in areas such as information assurance and cybersecurity, IT solutions, including DevOps as well. So I work as a chief strategy officer there, which means that I oversee marketing, our service delivery solution, development of our methodologies for delivery, as well as global quality control.
So you're really a time-tested veteran. I mean, after that many years, that many new hires and people and situations, you've seen a lot.
I have seen lots. Have seen lots. But the people that I worked with, the people that work for eGlobal Tech right now, I've seen a lot of great minds pass through. So they really do make a world of difference. And in this industry, it's all about helping the mission of government agencies as well, which is what we do and hold dear to our heart.
Good. And Phil, your background, please.
Yeah. Hey, good morning, John. So as Bronco mentioned, I work with him at eGlobal Tech. Actually, before my arrival into the federal consulting world, I actually worked for an international development consulting firm called TechnoServe. I had the opportunity to travel a little bit, use my Spanish. So it's been a really interesting experience kind of transitioning to the federal space. And what I really help agencies do is work more agile. You know, I mean, there's a constant reduction of resources and budget, you know, for a lot of federal agencies. So helping them kind of determine their vision, determine their sort of, you know, project management support, how they want to operate, you know, in the coming months.
Yeah, I like the international perspective. I think a lot of people maybe too USA-centric and think we have all the answers or all the problems or all the something. But it's good to have a little balance there of what other folks are doing and look at federal CIOs and say, well, have you tried something like this? Have you tried something like that? Yeah. Well, I'll toss right to you, Bronco, and say, well, you know, you pick up the Washington Post and you're sitting having a cup of coffee and you're going, well, They're all leaving the ship. It's like all the CAOs are leaving. What's going on? What does that mean to an agency, this transition and change? We expect it every 4 years. We don't expect it every 4 minutes. And so how does that affect your customers, your clients?
Absolutely. Well, I think that the change in CIO leadership across the federal government is a result of the administration change. And there's also the culture shift as well that's happening with that administration change. But it does affect the way that government agencies do business, because you want a continuity when you're in a CIO's office. You have an IT strategic plan, a strategic vision, and you want a champion in the CIO that's able to continue that over the course of a, let's say, specific time frame. With that change comes change in strategic direction as well, because there's new priorities when somebody else comes in. So that's a challenge. And also, a lot of times, the acting, quote unquote, CIO doesn't necessarily want to make waves by actually taking on a change or a decision that might impact the agency as a whole. And that also, I think, kind of slows progress.
Yeah, it sure does. So, Phil, from your perspective, you're a lot younger and maybe haven't seen as much. When you walk in a situation like that, this whole idea of an acting CIO and, mm-hmm. and people are going to tentative and I've seen the word champion, I think, is really important. In the commercial world, if there's a champion who's going to, you know, let's say it's Sally Smith and she's going to make sure we make this transition and hits all the deadlines, it's difficult not to have that champion, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for me, my observation, is just how vastly different a lot of the agency's missions are. So, I mean, I know there are a lot of, you know, CIOs out there, a lot of those positions, but I think they're really critical. I think that, you know, for every single agency, I mean, you can't just have one, you know, sort of federal CIO. But I think that every agency has these different missions, kind of different initiatives and how they operate. So you really need to have those people in place. And I agree, it also is a transition. But I think they're kind of a critical role for, you know, leading each agency's unique mission and what they're trying to do to serve the American people.
Well, Bronco, you really can't have a conversation with anyone these days without talking about the Game of Thrones. It comes up with everything, you know, football, talking about, you know, writing styles or drone racing. You have to talk about the Game of Thrones. And there's an article here written by this character, Steve O'Keefe. He's a wonderful guy, British accent and everything. And he says, CIO Game of Thrones. He talks about the number of CFO agencies and 9 missing and 250 people and all kinds of numbers. It's, 4 or 5 years ago, you never even thought of it. You just assume it's going to happen. But it's a whole new world, isn't it?
It is a whole new world. Well, believe it or not, an interesting fact about myself is I have not watched a single episode of Game of Thrones. So I might There's one other person that I know of who's in the same boat, but I will catch up. But yes, there are. There's a proliferation of CIOs within the federal government. Now, do I think that every agency needs a CIO in addition to the federal CIO? Absolutely. Because as Phil mentioned, every agency has a different mission need. They have different technology environments. They need somebody who knows that organization. Now, the CIOs in the component agencies within the department level, are all those positions necessary? I don't know. It depends. It depends upon the mission of that agency and the components, how large they are, what their IT portfolio is. And I think the federal CIO position is critical because mm-hmm. that position is there, in my opinion, to actually encourage shared services and cooperation, consolidated investment, things like that across the federal government. So you need somebody there as well. So there's a role for everyone to play. I don't think there's a role for just one federal CIO.
Well, Bronco, I'm sure you haven't seen Game of Thrones, but I know you've seen Seinfeld.
I have.
There's an episode of Seinfeld where they said, I'm going to name names. Oh, no, he's going to name names. Yes, he's going to. Simon is okay now. You're on the radio, bro. You have to name names. Give me an example of a CIO you think has encountered a tough situation and had a good vision and flexibility and looked great.
Right. Well, I think that I'm going to take an example with GSA. That is a client that Phil works for, and he could probably give a little bit more detail about that as well. But I think GSA did a very good job, and this all started with their previous CIO as well, has continued to consolidate their CIO function in one at the CIO for the entire agency level. And they've consolidated their enterprise architecture, their capital planning, all that stuff. So you have a more centralized role, better decision-making. It's more streamlined, right? And then a lot of times, and their agency structure really was meant to work that way. When you go to other agencies, for example, even smaller cabinet level agencies that have multiple CIOs who work independently of each other, it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And GSA is a good example of some of an agency that's really made that consolidation effort work.
Mm. So Bronco, been around, seen a lot of different things. You're relatively new to this community, Phil. So when you come in, interact with the folks there, what qualities do you think are exhibited by someone at level?
Yeah, no, and well, first off, I have seen Game of Thrones, so so I will respond to that in a second. But to the actual media question at hand, I think, you know, one of the greatest qualities that I've seen, especially with the GSA, is, you know, so you think of, you know, the CIO role as providing the utility to some extent of technology, but I think what they've done beyond that is they've done a good job partnering. They've done a good job partnering with different business units within the agency to work with them to develop emerging technologies, because the idea is it's not just enough to be the CIO and kind of running the day-to-day operations. It's really working with different pieces of the organization and helping them achieve their needs and, you know, working with the American public. But to go back to your initial point of the Game of Thrones, I guess my view of it, my reaction is, in Game of Thrones, aren't all of the different houses like composed of humans? So if they're all composed of humans and they're all of the same type, it kind of assumes that doesn't really translate into the federal world, right? I mean, they all have the same name, federal agencies, but federal agencies are so different. I mean, they vary so much, yet they share the same name. So, I mean, you know, it's they're all called federal agencies, but they don't really, you know, match that same description when you get down to it on that on a kind of basic level.
Have to take a little break here, come back. I want to talk more about CIOs, the challenges they face, maybe observations from two different perspectives here on, and maybe show some a shining light in the hill. Well, here's an example of someone who has, you know, looked at the challenge and been real successful. So rather emphasize the positive than look at the negative. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Phil Crawford, senior consultant, and Bronco Prometica, partner chief strategy officer for eGlobal Tech. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Phil Crawford, senior consultant, and Bronco Prometica, partner chief strategy officer at eGlobal Tech. I guess we're doing the eGlobal approach here. This is the perspective from 40,000 feet or whatever it is, and we're looking at those hurricanes, and what we're trying to do is just maybe try to get a detached perspective of federal CAOs and try to show, highlight some CAOs that have been effective and what hasn't been effective, and look at it from a company that's been around and seen a lot of stuff, and maybe we'll shut up about some stuff, and maybe we'll talk about successes there. And that's when we talk about successes here. I mean, there's a lot of people in this town bad-mouthing other people. We're not going to do that in this show. Nope. So Bronco, what I did, I got up my little computer and typed in eGlobal Tech and went over to Twitter, and I looked at all the tweets, and I started writing them down and saying hashtag this and automation, DevOps, and blockchain, and DevOps days, and DevOps factory, and security professional skills gap. And so what should federal CIOs know about DevOps, or should they know about them?
They should absolutely know about DevOps. So Agile has been in the market for a little bit of time. And I think that Agile is still encroaching in the federal government slowly. Agencies are adopting it, but and then they should move towards DevOps as well. The thing is that they need to, and Phil will agree with me, talk about the culture change that goes with, and this is more of the soft side, but really getting people to understand what it means to implement and deploy incrementally, to automate the deployment process, things like that. That's really what agency federal CIOs need to be concerned about, right? And then there's a whole process of making their governance more agile, implementing technologies that are vendor agnostic to automate their testing, to automate their deployment, to automate security testing and stuff like that. That's something that's going to take a little bit of time to transform in the federal government. But DevOps and the cost savings that can be incurred from it, the incremental deployments that could achieve results right away, that's what federal CIOs need to be thinking about when they're in a market of decreasing budgets and a need to implement more often, more effectively.
So when it comes to Agile, so the strategy officer talks about Agile and Lean and everything else, and now we got the guy who's digging the ditches, Phil. Okay, Phil, you're doing the ditches. You're actually implementing it. So tell us from your perspective about Agile and DevOps, and does it work or not work?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there was a report out last year that said about, I think, 46% had responded saying that in terms of barriers to adopting so further Agile adoption, 46% had said about that there was resistance to organizational change. And I think that, you know, within some of the clients we work with in government, you know, it's difficult to really shift into, you know, an Agile methodology. And also they want to shift into everything. So they don't actually do just little pieces. But what I would say is when you pick your methodology, your project management methodology, it really is tied into your culture. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that we really try to do, in addition to bring the expertise around Agile, I mean, the sprints and the retrospectives and the daily standups, but is really, I think you have to champion Agile to help change the culture as well, because that's a key part of it. It really is, when you're trying to pick a methodology, it's connected to the culture of the agency and the people you're working with.
On this side of the table is the old guy with gray hair, and I'm saying, well, Phil, you should wear a three-piece suit and get to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then you get your email, and then you go out to lunch and come back and leave at 5, and then all the work will be done that way, and you turn to me and go, hey, old guy, it's way loose and more flexible than that. I got team members in Seattle. Mm-hmm. We may have to have a meeting online at 7 o'clock at night, and what about this and that, and different times. This is called e-global. We could have accounts outside the United States. Don't you get it? Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with 9 o'clock in the morning and a tie. It's got to do with listening to customers and being agile. And this is what Bronco says, the big strategy guy. You got to listen to your customers, whether in Japan or in this deal, whatever, and be flexible with that. Yep. And so take that tie and shove it. Just listen, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I can just build a little bit on what Phil said as well, that culture, that sort of mindset is something that is coming to the government in slow pieces, right? But then there's also the practical side to Agile, and use this as a little bit of a venting exercise. Not really venting, but when you talk about Agile transition, you need to talk about changing the whole, not just the mindset of how you do development, but you have to change to all the practical things as well. First, you need to define what Agile means for your agency, right? Then you have to take a look at all the guidelines that you have, your systems development lifecycle, your LCM, whatever it is, and you need to make that function in a more Agile way. You need to talk to your acquisition shop and see, okay, this is what we need to do in order to acquire services and pay for services in an Agile manner. You need to coach your developers to talk about how they partner with operations maintenance, development, security, to develop secure solutions of high quality. This is something that we've done as a firm for a long time, is to help agencies make that comprehensive transition. It's not enough to say, yes, I want to go to Agile and expect people to jump up. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to make that transition.
So Bronco, I'm listening to your voice in my mic, and I'm saying, geez, this guy's got a distinctive voice. He could be on TV and be like an Iron Chef. And I said, maybe he could make a Fatara. So Iron Chef, Fatara. What about Fatara and CAOs? Good, bad, just another checklist, or does it help them? You know, what good is it?
Well, I mean, I think there's two schools of thought in Fatara, in my head, what I've seen. There's the compliance exercise where you read the letter of the law and then you say, okay, this is what Fatara means and this is what we have to
big
do.
Big snooze. That's the 9 o'clock in the morning with a tie and smile.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And that does not match with the spirit of Fatara. Mm. The spirit of Fatara is to have a more consolidated, central, partner-like environment when making IT investment decision-making decisions. And then I believe that the agencies that are doing it that way, that agencies and CIOs that are saying, look, the spirit of the law is this. This is how we're going to do it to better manage our investment decision making, to centralize authority, to be have it be more partner-like atmosphere within the agencies where we invest in a consolidated manner. Those agencies are the ones that are going to flourish under Fatara.
It's almost like gaming the system. Well, how can I game the system? Well, Phil, we got to get an A on this one. Okay, so we'll do this checks box, blah, blah, blah. But the idea is that not to get the A, the idea is to accomplish a more flexible, collaborative approach to solving a problem. Because believe me, tomorrow my listener is going to have a brand new problem. And, mm-hmm. you know, who would have dreamed of one hurricane and punching again the next hurricane?
Right.
And what are the people at FEMA doing?
Right.
You think they're beating their head against the wall right now?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't predict that. And so maybe collaboration is the way. And And I want to believe in Fatara, and I've certainly have heard Connolly up on stage talking about, you've heard him too.
Yes, yes.
And I did think it was a dessert or maybe a breakfast dish when I first heard it. I didn't know why they picked that name. And I think it's, I think the whole idea of CAOs having a more say in the outcome. I think outsiders don't realize that sometimes their hands are tied.
Yep, their hands are tied, absolutely. It depends upon the agency structure, and it depends upon how each of the component agencies under the CIO's office are funded, right? So if you have your independent funding and you're protected by regulation, then those CIOs of those component agencies pretty much do what they want, right? And so their hands are tied. But the point of Fatara is that those problems have been realized, those issues, those constructs, and they're saying, look, we really need to make a more consolidated effort to invest more wisely. And that is the spirit of what Fatara is. And I think agencies and their CIOs, the component CIOs, really need to find out how to work together because they're all working for a common cause.
This is great because Bronco gives the 40,000 strategic, and I go, Phil, okay, now, what do you think of that? Is it full of beans or what? So Phil, from your perspective, so you're in there. You're in agencies.
Yeah.
I mean, you're there. You're talking to people. And so you're sitting down there working with clients every day. So what? Give me two challenges. We just have a couple minutes here before we break. What are the challenges they have in moving to the cloud, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think for them, you know, one of the key challenges when we went to the cloud is thinking through the costing structure, right? I mean, one of the really amazing things about moving to the cloud is that you don't have to procure, you know, all your systems up front. You can essentially go to an a la carte mode. But what I think the challenge there, though, is from the budgeting perspective, is like, well, how do you budget that out? You know what I mean? So the structure for, you know, a lot of agencies is to think through, okay, the next fiscal year, we're going to budget this amount. But I think you said a little bit earlier in the show, well, what happens, maybe before the show, but what happens when you just go through your entire allotment for your different cloud services in a couple of days or, you know, a couple of weeks or something like that. So that ability to, you know, I think use the new technologies is great. And also, I think that's the key challenge of also trying to build them in, but then also building them into your kind of your costing and your logistics and how to actually acquire them effectively based on their key features, like, you know, having a la carte pricing.
I think pricing is important. We touched earlier on Fatara and some, you know, strategic goals. Let's take a little break here, come back, talk more about the cost. And I got to bring up Woody Guthrie here. Because he went sort of song, it's all about the do-re-mi. And the do he's talking about is the greenback, the money. It's all about the do-re-mi, isn't it, Phil? It really is. It's true for agencies, too. There's a limited amount of do-re-mi out there, and how can you get a tune out of that? Who knows? Yeah. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant, and Bronco Prometica, Partner Chief Strategy Officer at eGlobal Tech. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant and Bronco Prometica, Partner, Chief Strategy Officer, eGlobal Tech. We are looking at our friends, the CAOs in the federal government, and trying to figure out best practices, good, bad, ugly, sad, and two perspectives. One, a strategy officer, guy who's been around, you know, beat up and knocked around, seen a lot of stuff. And a relatively new person who's got some training and is actually on the ground in agencies talking to actual human beings. And so we have two different perspectives here and talked about a lot of things. Before the break, we talked about a guy named Guthrie. And we talked about a song that's all about the do-re-mi. Well, tell me, Bronco, is it all about the dough? Is that all about the CIO? Should they focus on the dough and the cost of everything? And the cost of moving to the cloud? How can you justify the move to the cloud? Cost has got to be one of the concerns.
Right. It has to be. I personally don't think it should be the primary concern. I think the CIO should focus more about how to increase performance in order to meet the agency's mission more effectively. That's what the focus is. To do that, they have to do it in a cost-effective manner. You can't now say this is what we have to do and spend a lot of money to do it because it'll take away from other important initiatives. I think that cost in terms of cloud computing is very important as well because you want to make sure that first you're investing in something that makes sense. I keep on saying it, not every solution is made for the cloud. You have to do an analysis. You have to take a look at the security. You have to take a look at technical infrastructure to make sure that it will be more effective in cloud computing. Then, one other thing, there's a lot of things that I could talk about. One other thing is that you have to acquire the cloud computing solution in an effective manner, which means that you cannot issue a solicitation for a firm fixed price for a cloud service. It doesn't make any sense. Cloud is about paying as you go, being able to provision and deprovision services as needed. So you have to really take a look at your acquisition strategy and say, are we acquiring this service in a way that it makes sense that we could get the same benefits from the cloud that private sector does, for example?
Well, that's the strategy officer speaking. Now we're going to have Phil Boots on the Ground Crawford. Well, Boots on the Ground Crawford. What happens in the real world? You're sitting there and you're talking to a customer, mm-hmm. and they're thinking about, hey, we're going to move to this crowd service. So what kind of challenges do they have?
Yeah, no, I think that what Bronco was saying is absolutely correct. I think in addition to the actual technology being implemented, you have to think about two other things, right? The people and the processes. So I think in terms of your people, you have to make sure you're training them, you know, on how to use all the softwares and tools. And they might be using something else. They might be, using some old piece of software that they use because they know how to use it and not really familiar with whatever offerings are coming with your cloud migration. And then also security. I mean, when you're working in the cloud, you're collaborating a lot. You're sharing files a bit more. So also thinking about security and PII and making sure that type of stuff is kind of reduced and that your users are as educated as possible, because it's not just installing it and having it available. It's then what do you do and how do you make your staff and your workforce who are supposed to be using this stuff to be more productive, actually productive, and actually helping basically meet the citizen needs.
So Bronco, we get in the car, we drive up to Capitol Hill. There's something like the Congressional Oversight Committee or something. And I'm thinking about this word oversight. Now, a federal CIO officer, they have oversight responsibilities too. So it's in the premises. Of course, they have to have oversight. What if it's in the cloud? Do you just put your feet up and smoke a cigar? I mean, they have to be worried just as much in the cloud as in down the hall.
Yep.
Absolutely. But they will still, I'd argue, have oversight of that cloud strategy. They own the data. They own the service, right? They just aren't able to touch the actual physical server that provides them with that cloud service. That's the only difference. But I mean, I would argue, how often do you go and hug your server a day? It's not really
emotional guidance from Bronco. Yeah. How often do you hug your server?
but the premise of that is that it's the same thing. You should have the same service, better or the same type of performance as you would in the cloud, as you would in an on-premise solution. If you don't, then there's a problem, right? So, and you oversee that. You have to make sure that you own the data. You have to make sure that you're not locked into a cloud service provider. You have to make sure that you can, that you actually pay for what you use and what not use. Make sure that the right security families are assigned to the service that you have, the security control families. It's the same thing. You have not. That's what I try to get out to my clients. It's the same thing. You have the same service. You have the same oversight.
So don't buy the Macanudo cigars just because you're going to the cloud. It's the same job, just a different way to approach it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Phil, my avocation is reading. I'm reading a book now called American Freedom, American Slavery. It talks about the form of the United States government. Mm-hmm. Primarily in Virginia.
Cool.
And they try to figure out the Constitution, try to figure out how many represent term limits and everything else. And here we are with CIOs. Maybe the CIO should have a 5-year term limit. Maybe instead of every 4 years it gets shaken up, maybe a 5-year term limit from a CIO would help for that, your phrase, continuity and change. What do you think about term limits or something for like that for CIO?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very interesting idea, and I think it definitely would allow for a lot of continuity. I know it's a role that there's constant transition with it, and I think that it definitely could provide an opportunity for that CIO to have kind of constant leadership and be able to implement different projects and really kind of partner up with different pieces of the organization that they're working for.
Strategy guy, 5-year term, good, bad?
I'm not sure, and here's the reason why. So I've done a lot of speaking abroad as well, and one of the countries that I did a lot of speaking with, and I went to meet with their foreign minister, with their ministers and their foreign minister. We talked about the need for.
Well, let's hear the name of the country. What's the name
Serbia,
of the
Serbia? Serbia. Yeah. And so when I was over there, the way that they work is every time there's a change in the political structure, there's a change in a CIO. There's no such thing as a career CIO. There's no such thing as
ooh, that's tough.
Yeah. It is tough because everything changes, everything,
of course.
Every couple of years, right? I like the fact that, yes, there's shakeups in CIOs here with administration changes, sometimes more, sometimes less. But I like the fact that you have a consistent career, in some places, I like the idea of a consistent career CIO, somebody who's able to carry the vision through, who's able to say, okay, this is what the new administration's priorities are. Here's how we will apply that to our organization and keep it going. I don't like frequent change in that because CIOs, that position, that and the authority that goes with it is not dependent on any political change. It should be a constant.
Yeah, how can you bring institutional knowledge if it's changing all the time? Yeah. We tried that 3 years ago, and Phil said it didn't work, and so why should we do the whole I know it's going to happen. It's going to be the whole same thing again and rebuild the mousetrap and go, that one didn't work again, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you really are e-global then, huh?
We are e-global.
So how many accounts do you have outside the United States, or how many customers do you have?
So the work that I did outside of the United States was basically funded through the Office of Public Diplomacy in the State Department. It was something that I went abroad to talk about big data, security, cloud computing, and how it should be applied to their environment, the lessons learned in the United States, and how they could learn from the mistakes and kind of skip those and go through more successfully. As far as actual work is concerned for the company, we do not have any accounts outside of the United States. We focus solely on the federal government.
Well, Phil, I'm the old guy. You're the young guy here. And when I first started in this business, he's talking about big iron. And IBM was big iron. And they switched that to big data. Mm-hmm. And if you take a look at what's going on in the United States government, it's a lot of big iron still out there. I mean, what's 80% of the budget is going to legacy systems. Yep. And that's the big surprise. I mean, if I've been surprised at anything in the last 10 years, is that, John, you can talk about that cloud and have Vivek Kundra in here and the 25-point plan and the Bronco 2-point plan and the this and that. But there's legacy out there, and that is a challenge, is making the transition from that.
Yep.
Have you encountered that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think the PSC Council had identified, for agencies in terms of the top five areas that they're spending in over the next couple of years, IT modernization is one of those areas. It's a critical area. You definitely see, when working with clients, a lot of systems that are old, that have been around, and a lot of money and resources, IT spend is put into those older systems. And, one thing I was also thinking about, a bit earlier was, cybersecurity. And I know that, cybersecurity, they're moving to, more offensive and kind of moving from the compliance piece. But I think, cybersecurity relates to IT modernization because, a lot of this is very old, outdated systems that just don't have the security controls in place that's causing some of this, that's causing, some of these cybersecurity issues. So I think it's an absolutely critical topic.
We will take a little break and come back, talk more about critical topics and CIOs. We're looking at federal CIOs from a different perspective. We're looking at a well-experienced practitioner and someone who's actually got boots on the ground and maybe make some observations that, maybe one of the CIOs can listen and take away and maybe make their life just a little bit easier. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant and Bronco Prometica Partner, Chief Strategy Officer, company called eGlobal Tech. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant and Bronco Prometica Partner, Chief Strategy Officer at a company called eGlobal. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to get a global perspective on and a lot of the issues and concerns that CEOs have. And rather than just taking one specific technology, we're looking at all of them, and the conversation's been all over the board. And I tell you what, if you want to learn more about eGlobal, what I did is I went to their Twitter feed, and that is at underscore eGlobal Tech, and you learn about DevOps and blockchains and DevOps Factory and all kinds of things. We talked about that earlier. And in the break, we had a kind of a sense of conversation about something that'll never happen. So, Bronco, let's talk about something that'll never happen. Oh, that's interesting. And I'll say the two words. Now, the FCC may grab me for saying this, but acquisition reform. Oh, I didn't say that. I've been tossed to you, Bronco. Hey, run for that for 20 minutes and not say no. It seems like, back in the day, you'd buy a desktop computer and put it on your desk and worry about desktop security, Now, there's no capital. It's like, okay, let's sign up for this service and it'll expand, condense based on what we need. And how do you write a PO for that? And acquisition reform has to be part of this puzzle for helping out CIOs.
It definitely has to. I think from at least my viewpoint of acquisition reform, there's an appetite for it in the federal government. However, where do you start? That's the issue, because there's it's so expansive. It's governed by the FAR, which is one piece of regulation that we're expecting to kind of accommodate all different technology changes and all different technology paradigms. Unfortunately, the way that we acquire technology, if we want to use the if we want to reap the full benefits of it, we can't do it in the same way. It has to be a little bit more flexible. The budget planning process has to be a little bit more flexible. You have to be able to acquire services and fund them in incremental ways, not in one big lump sum. You know, then, and if you see an acquisition failing, like the system failing, you need to be able to cut funding and move it to something else as well. So in order to take advantage of emerging technologies, emerging trends, there needs to be acquisition reform so the government can actually realize the full benefits, because that's the way it works in the private sector, and that's where they have achieved some of those benefits as well.
When I was an undergraduate back with Abraham Lincoln, you'd study philosophy, you'd learn about thesis and antithesis, okay? And I keep thinking about the way federal government works is they have a set of requirements that go out there, and a few months later, five companies submit, and then it gets selected, and then there's a protest, and then they order something that was last year's answer. And the direct antithesis of that is flexible and move and change, and something new came up, and oh, next week there's a new development at Redshift with Amazon, and this is cheaper, so that old pricing doesn't work. By the way, it's cheaper, mm-hmm. and so we have to flex. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like the system is stacked against acquisition reform.
Absolutely. I mean, when you see acquisitions go through their life cycle, first, they take too long. And you're right. Once the acquisition process goes through, whatever they were acquiring initially is already outdated. Secondly, the protest process needs to be somewhat more regulated, right? Protests are now let's just say they're just a common expectation. Whenever you have a sizable,
it's almost built into the proposal.
It is, and when we bid on stuff and we're forecasting what our revenue is going to be from it, we always figure in a protest process, and that shouldn't be the case. You know, people should not be allowed to protest on a whim. There should be something to that protest, or otherwise, the protester will need to, let's say, pay a penalty or something like that, because it's not doing anybody a favor—not the winning company, not the losing company, and certainly not the government.
My wife and I just bought a Bosch dishwasher. And so it's like, hey, you got this Bosch dishwasher, about to plug it in, and don't plug it in.
Absolutely.
Because the people at Samsung are protesting the reason you bought the Bosch.
Yep, yep.
And so what do I do now? Well, you wash dishes by hand. Wait a minute. What's going on in the federal government.
Absolutely.
Now is that they have the solution rapidly changing. Things are going on. We've got to move to this. And whoa, don't plug that in. Mm-hmm. Samsung's got to have a shot at it. And we gave them a shot.
Right.
I gave Samsung a shot. Bosch is the best.
Yep.
I mean, may not apply to this world, but it's kind of interesting.
Yep.
So a young and impressionable Phil, or boots on the ground Phil, one of these nicknames we're going to have for you. You're going to be around a long time, a lot longer than me. You'll be probably visiting my grave one of these days. People are applauding. Yay! Half the room applauds, half the room is silent. I hate the silent ones. So prediction here, 5-10 years, you're probably going to be in this game a while. Mm-hmm. So where do you see it evolving? Do you think they're going to have breakthroughs and figure out how to do this? Or from your young and impressionable perspective, where do you think it's going to head the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, no, I just think I'll just give an example from the private industry, which I think is kind of what could be interesting in this particular scenario. So I think Google does something where if you are doing a project, right, and you actually come under budget, you're actually rewarded by just saying, I can't keep doing this project, you know, that's it, and not just trying to sort of spend all your resources. That type of really agile, lean thinking, I think, is something that's just really needed within government. I think probably 5-10 years, this will still be happening. But I think that there needs to be, a stronger effort to continue to reform it. And I think that it's something that we'll still probably be talking about, it, but hopefully a little bit less.
If you look at the news about the hurricanes, they thought Tampa was going to be hit. Yeah. And Tampa has just dodged the bullet year after year after year. It's like it's got the invulnerable shield around it or something, and they didn't have to prepare. Sometimes disasters force people to change. Mm-hmm. Bronco, Mr. Strategy there, is it going to take some kind of a disaster to force people to change?
I hope not.
Me too.
I hope not. I mean, if you take a look in history, it always seems to be the case. There's always all change comes in a reactive manner. I hope that we've all learned our lesson and we could kind of anticipate what might happen and actually take corrective action early instead of waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, change and change management is always difficult. Mm-hmm. So, Phil, when boots on the ground and people talk about new types of technology mm-hmm. and phones and watches and tablets, good or bad? I mean, everyone talks about the positives on it, you know, mm-hmm. but is good or bad on that? I mean, now you have to design a website so it looks good on a phone and a tablet and a desktop.
Yeah.
Good limitations, or you think that's really a benefit?
No, I think it is. But I think whenever you're acquiring a new emerging technology, it has to fit in with your overall strategy. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? And inevitably, how does that align with your overall mission of helping American citizens get, key services that they need? And so, you don't necessarily need to have all the emerging technologies. But I mean, I think if it has the potential, like something like blockchain, is able to really help your mission and, develop like accounting systems, that's great. And so I just think the emerging technology should be specific to your agency, what you're trying to do, and your overall mission. So it's good.
I was at an event, Bronco, and they gave you a presentation on blockchain. Mm-hmm. And the woman got up there and said, well, here's my presentation on blockchain today, because it was way different 6 months ago. And guess what? If I come back in 6 months, I'm going to have can't use these slides again. And so change is real quick and hard to adapt, isn't it? And especially with something like blockchain, that's changing so quickly. Are you optimistic the next 5 years you think you're going to adapt and figure it out?
Yes. Let's say, for example, if we take a look at blockchain. First, I believe that the premise of blockchain, the definition of blockchain, has remained constant. The way that you apply it and architect it is something that might change over the course of time. Agencies are looking to adopt blockchain right now. They're talking about it. It'll take a little bit of time before they actually apply it. But there's CIOs out there within the health and human services realm, within the Department of Education realm, things like that, where they do a lot of transactional processing. And they're saying, hey, blockchain might be something that can help us secure these transactions. Let's take a look at it. So over the next 5 years or so, I expect agencies to really, really take a close look and start applying and implementing blockchain architectures.
So boots on the ground, Phil, when you sit and talk to actual human beings, do they worry about open source, open data, or they just want to solve the problem? Is that even part of the strategy game, might say, mm-hmm. open source first? Boots on the ground, is that really a concern?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, what people want is solutions to whatever their mission is. So I think that, open source is definitely a trend. I think it's a great thing. But I think what most people are looking for is just whatever technology works. And I think that, certainly open source could work. It could be something in the cloud. It could be, something else. But it's I don't think they're too worried about that particular piece. I just think they're worried about just trying to actually develop the solution.
Bronco, last word. You got 20 seconds. Talk about the future of the IT and the federal government. There, that's going to be a hard one to do in 20 seconds. Do it in Serbian.
I could. I'll choose English for now. So I think the future of federal IT is going to include things. For one of the things that's happening right now is the biggest asset that the government has is data. That's where the power comes from in terms of federal government. Using that data in a more effective manner is going to be something that every federal agency IT strategic plan pretty much holds right now. And over the next 5 years, that'll become a reality. Access anywhere at any time, data that's unstructured and unstructured in a cohesive, visualized manner, that's something that agencies are going to actually go for. I think that systems modernization, especially legacy modernization, that's another strategic goal that agencies have, especially those that are built on outdated technology right now, because agencies don't want to feel like they're going to be held to only a few people that know COBOL or something. They're going to want to be able to take control of their IT infrastructures. Blockchain and other emerging technologies are going to enter into the federal space. I think agencies are figuring out how to actually apply that. And within the next 5 years, that's definitely going to be something that they're going to embrace.
So, Phil, you can get a history book and look up COBOL and find out all about.
I think I remember that.
Something like that. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Phil Crawford, Senior Consultant, and Branko Prometica, Partner Chief Strategy Officer at eGlobal Tech. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.